Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable and to our weekly book pick segment. We are very pleased to welcome back for the first time this year James Conrad and Jackie Callahan of the Golden Notebook in Woodstock, New York. They've been keeping track of all kinds of cool things that are going on at the bookstore and wonderful books that have been coming in and are occupying the store shelves. It is a pleasure to welcome James and Jackie to the program this morning. How are you?
Good. How are you, Joe?
Wonderful. It is great to hear your voices. Thank you so much for being with us. So, where would you like to begin?
Well, I'm going to start, and you know, three of my four books on my list today are actually having their publication dates today, so that's kind of a cool New Year's kind of thing.
That is.
And my first, I didn't actually plan on that. I just noticed it yesterday. I was like, oh, great. And hopefully they all arrived in the store.
That's good marketing.
So the first is a novel, Beautyland, by Marie-Helene Bertino. And it's a really great way to start the year because it's going to be known as one of the best books of the year, I'm pretty sure. Bertino is the author of two previous novels, 2 A.M. at the Cat's Pajamas and Parakeet. And in her new one, On the Surface, Beautyland is sort of your classic coming-of-age story about a kind of outcast kid growing up in a struggling single-parent household and who eventually gets to New York City to fulfill her dreams. But the twist here is that the outcast is as outcast as you can get, as she's actually an alien. And her name is Adina, and Adina has apparently been sent from another planet far, far away with the instructions to study and report back on the species of humans on Earth. And at a young age, her mother brings home an old fax machine she found on the street and gives it to Adina, who uses it to send her observations of how humans interact with each other back to her home planet. And she sort of does this. The observations she makes are everywhere from small things like how humans eat and dress to the larger questions of how they deal with sex and love and family and all of that. And she has late night meetings with her superiors who act as a kind of classroom support group for helping her get through this childhood she has, which is very, very outcast, both economically and socially. And she even at one point has to take speech therapy. Now, like any really great novel, there are multiple ways to read this. Is Adina actually an alien, or is she actually a metaphor for all of us? As in, don't we all grow up in the world sort of seeing how humans act as something completely foreign and strange until we sort of learn to fit in and act in the same way ourselves? And by the time Adina gets to school, she's labeled as gifted in her intelligence, which can also be seen as a polite way of saying she's a keen observer of everything going on, and she sort of questions everything, which is, you know, something intelligent people would do. But when she tries off at high school production of Our Town, she does such a crazy, amazing job of acting, because she's done it all of her life, really, that she gets the part of the narrator, who's the most complex character in the entire production, as well as the character who's the only one with the ability to sort of see through time as the other characters just sort of act out their day-to-day existences. But by the time she gets to New York City, this sort of alien metaphor gets another twist as she develops into an artist. And I imagine most authors and artists would consider themselves a bit alien as they use creative ways to interpret the world around them, as Adina does. But I won't go further with the second half of the book, and especially the end, it's pretty sort of out of the world amazing. But I do want to point out how funny the book is. And just if you think about how many times you've ever heard someone say, I'm from another planet, or you say it yourself, and the other person just sort of smiles and sort of says the same thing back. It's like, you know, maybe we're all from other planets. But ultimately, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous book. She's an amazing writer. And we're lucky to have an event with her actually coming up a week from Saturday, the 20th, 2 p.m. at Graveside Variety right in Woodstock. And just one quick last thing about the book. It's the second book in less than a year that really draws heavily from Thornton Wilder's Our Town, the other being Ann Patchett's Tom Lake.
Right.
So I suggest for all you booksellers, you get out there and stock up on Our Town, because we've been selling Our Town too because of Tom Lake. So it releases today, Beautyland.
Beautyland by Marie-Helene Bertino. Next up.
So I'm actually starting out with an older book. You know, during the year, I see books as they come out. I want to read them. They pass me by. I put them on my stack to be read, you know, when I have some time off, which usually happens after Christmas time. And so the first book that I grabbed from that pile was S.A. Cosby's latest book called All the Sinners Bleed. And this actually came out in June of this year. And S.A. Cosby, his previous two books, Blacktop Wasteland, Razorblade Tears, amazing, amazing books. Thrillers, by the way. This book, we find Titus Crown. He's an ex-FBI agent. And he is the first black sheriff of Tarrant County, which is in rural Virginia. And the book opens up with a scene of an active shooter at a school, and the victim is a beloved white teacher. The shooter is a former student who is black. The shooter is ultimately killed by white deputies under the supervision of Titus Crown. And when Titus accesses the phone of the beloved white teacher who was shot, he sees horrible pictures of torture and murder, and the victims are all black. And so from there, the story kind of rolls on. It's Titus's job to find the person who is part of the reason why the teacher was killed. It's a serial killer. He does this while dealing with his own traumas, and also just the complexity of being a black sheriff in a southern county. You know, to quote Titus, he feels he's in a no man's land between people who believed in him, people who hated him because of his skin color, and people who believed he was a traitor to his race. So really excellent, complex character, and not shying away from the question of race in a small town. It's a fantastic police procedural. One of the things I loved about this book is all the great details about small town life. James and I have a bookstore in a small town, and it is fun and it is crazy. And this is a book that can capture just tiny details, and makes it just adds to the complexity and wonderfulness of this great thriller. So All the Sinners Bleed, S.A. Cosby.
A great book. I enjoyed that last year, and look forward to future books by S.A. Cosby. All Sinners Bleed is that new title. Next up.
All right. My next one is also just published today. But I think Nancy Furstinger has done things with WAMC before. If not, most of her probably know her as an author and a leading Hudson Valley animal lover and supporter and animal activist. And a while ago, she published a wonderful book called Catskill Creatures. It's a book for all ages, and it's sort of a guide of how of all the wildlife that live with us in the Catskills, as well as the general Hudson Valley area. And I'd say, like a lot of New England, these critters can be found. And she finally ran out of copies of this book, and so the Golden Book Press has just republished it. And we've republished it in full color so that the beautiful full-page illustrations by Bob Ebdon can be thoroughly enjoyed. And today's the official day. We're opening it. We had copies earlier in the store, so I sort of forgot today was the publication date. But some of the things you can learn in this book are, what are the critters that are not scared of a skunk spray? What is the secret weapon that toads use to protect themselves? Where is the prime real estate for raccoons to live? When do the black bears actually head to their dens to hide in the winter? And my favorite being, why are bats your favorite alternative for bug spray? So that was one I loved the most. At the end of the book, there are chapters for the reader to help you learn how you can help protect local wildlife, and also profile some local wildlife organizations and sanctuaries. And the book is great for everyone interested in the Catskill region, as well as general East Coast wildlife, like I said. And Nancy's going to be doing a lot of school book fairs and other general events, and local animal organizations and groups will be doing things with her. So look out for her, because Nancy is just a wonderful human critter, and I'm sure she'll bring along furry friends with all these events. So definitely look out for her.
Catskill Creatures by Nancy Furstinger. All right, next up.
All right. So my next book is a book that actually came out in early December 2023. And it is called Molly, and it is by Blake Butler. And this is a memoir, and it is the memoir of Blake Butler's wife, Molly Brodack. Both Molly and Blake are writers. Molly's a poet. I think this is the best memoir I've ever read. It's super intense. It's really gorgeous. It's really sad. It's a very challenging read in a lot of different ways. It starts out with the story. The story starts out on the day that Molly Brodeck dies by suicide, and this is in March of 2020. And then what Blake Butler does is he kind of goes back to the beginning of his relationship with Molly, their first interactions, their on-again, off-again relationship. They're both very intense people. They both have their own kind of dysfunctionality. They document everything. They're both journal. They journal like crazy. They finally make a decision to commit. They have a beautiful house in Atlanta with chickens. In addition to teaching writing, Molly is an incredible baker, inventive. She even was like hired or won a place on a show that was meant to be on called The Great American Baking Show. Really incredible baker. And Molly and Blake have very different childhoods. Molly's is really filled with trauma. She wrote a book, her own memoir, called Bandit, which is about growing up with her unpredictable and emotionally abusive bank robber father. During the course of the story of the relationship of Blake and Molly, Blake's parents both die. They both die of They've suffered from dementia. So then once we go through the kind of arc of their relationship and Molly commits suicide, then we get into a different phase of the book where Blake becomes aware of a secret life, if you will, that Molly had during their relationship. And that's really incredible and intense to read about. This book is really, really honest. It has a really just unrelenting eye on Blake, the writer, and Molly, his wife. He's mining both of their journals for this. He has her poetry in it. He's kind of walking hand in hand with fear in this book, like it's right there, but it's also a very fearless book. Really, really recommend this to people who love memoirs. And I have a customer to thank for this recommendation. A shout out to Kristen in Schenectady for recommending this to me. But Molly by Blake Butler from a small imprint called Archway Editions.
Excellent. Next up.
All right. My next also publishes today. It is You Only Call Me When You're in Trouble by Stephen McCauley. This is by the author of Objects of My Affection and My Ex-Life, are two of his many books. And it starts with this sentence, quote, "Thus far, Dorothy had written her daughter three versions of the email inviting her to the opening of her retreat center in Woodstock, New York, but she hadn't had the nerve to send any of them." So this obviously got the full attention of the Golden Notebook and all of our readers. And McCauley is an author who's really good at throwing the reader right into what I call a domestic disaster scenario. It's sort of like you've sat down at a restaurant and at the next table there are two very loud people gossiping. And if you don't know who they're talking about, you just can't help listening and you eventually like learn everything about them. But here we have a young woman, Cecilia, who's a professor, and she's currently on leave as we've been assured at least, she's been falsely accused of a Title IX sexual harassment of a student. And this causes her boyfriend's mother, who doesn't think very much of her, and doesn't think she's good enough for her son, to give her an ultimatum to end their relationship, which causes her to buy a few weeks of time to await for the decision of the Title IX thing, which she believes will exonerate her. And so she buys this time by going back home to Massachusetts to move in with her gay uncle, who's always been her stable family member in her life. However, her gay uncle, who's been so stable, has just had his long-term lover leave him and is about to be fired from his career as an architect. So all of these roads lead to Woodstock as the uncle and niece decide to go to her mother's retreat opening there. And the mother is planning to reveal who her daughter's father truly is that she's never told her and to possibly admit to some very bad health things that she's going through. Now, this all sounds like way too much chaos for the first 100 pages of any book, but this is actually what McCauley does a really, really great job with. and you're pulled right into the middle of the big mess, and you cannot easily put the book down until you sort of find out how it all untangles or see how it tangles up even more. And my favorite thing about Macaulay's writing is that he's very sarcastic and funny with observations in areas like real estate and academia and the wellness movement and long-term relationships. But his best insights in this book, I find, sort of come from aging, where he discusses the differences that people are experiencing in work and relationships as young people versus when you're middle-aged or versus when you're older. And, of course, we end up in Woodstock to sort all of this out. So what a better premise for a very funny and smart comedy of errors. And it publishes today, and it is You Only Call Me When You're in Trouble by Stephen Macaulay.
Excellent. Always, he's a great author and always fun when he has a new book out. Next up.
All right. Next up are two Dylan-related books. It seems like there's at least one or two books that come out about Bob Dylan every year, and that this year, 2023, was no exception. The first book I want to talk about is called My Greenwich Village, Dave, Bob, and Me, and it's by Terry Thall and is published by McNitter and Grace. And Terry Thall, she was totally part of the folk music scene in 1960s Greenwich Village. She was actually, age 21, Bob Dylan's first manager. She grew up in Brooklyn. And in her book, she describes, you know, she's not a musician, but she's totally part of the scene. And so she is wonderful descriptions of Greenwich Village as a community that was supportive. It was musically exciting, one where you had loads of fun. She talks about what it was like to hang out in the village coffee houses, to host folk singers like Tom Paxton and Phil Oakes, who spent evenings at her apartment, and to be their manager. She was married to Dave Van Ronk, and he has his own wonderful memoir, The Mayor of McDougal Street, biography, I guess. And one thing about Terry is that she was always super involved in social justice work. And ultimately, as we know, Bob Dylan moved on to Albert Grossman being his manager and Columbia Records and so forth. And after about 10 years in the music scene, she left to work in nonprofits. And this is just a very personal, unique story. It really adds a lot of color and flavor. If you're interested in the village scene in the 60s, this is a terrific book by a very cool woman. So that's My Greenwich Village by Terry Thall. Now, kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum is another amazing, fabulous new book, which is called Bob Dylan. It's 600 and like 80 pages. It's Bob Dylan mixing up the medicine, and it's edited by Mark Davidson and Parker Fischel. And so they work with the Bob Dylan Archives and the Bob Dylan Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And so what this book does is that it puts together pictures and like mementos and ephemera from Bob Dylan from the archives, and couples those with amazing essays by incredible writers about music, from Amanda Petrush to Raymond Foy, Richard Hell, folks like Sean Wilentz. It's so cool. And it goes through basically, you know, Dylan's whole career. It's like a coffee table book, you know. It's a big book, but you could pick it up any chapter and read through it. It's a must for people who love Dylan. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. So, and it is published by the museum, I believe. Callaway is the publisher. So Bob Dylan mixing up the medicine.
All right. We have about 2 minutes. So we have three books in 2 minutes. Let's see how we do.
Well, very quickly, I'll just say that I was lucky enough to see advanced screening of the movie American Fiction. So I went way back in time and read Erasure by Percival Everett, which the movie is based on. And both the book and the movie are just absolutely terrific. And the reason I usually like read the book first, then see the movie, because then you can be disappointed by the movie and not have it hurt the book. But both of these are just excellent. And it's a send up of the publishing industry on diversity mainly. And well, totally. And the reason I read the book was because the ending, which I won't talk about at all, was so sort of like over the top that I had to see what the book did with the ending. And I just also really missed the characters. But it's a, you know, it's a literary writer who has never had a bestseller and all that, and he's always being pressured to write something that's a little bit more in a, to be polite, quote-unquote, contemporary voice, meaning, you know, they want him to really use his diversity in his writing and all that, and his blackness. And he resists it all of his life. But he finally does it because he has a financial need. And he, of course, everything goes wrong because he, you know, the publishing world loves it, of course. And so he has to create this character, this ex-con, who is the writer. And he thinks that he can change the title of the book to this expletive that'll stop the whole process, but it makes it even worse. Anyways, it was a lot of fun to reread the book, and I suggest both the movie and the book. They're both terrific. And he's got a new book coming out this spring that's going to be a really big one called James, which is a retelling of Huckleberry Finn from Jim's point of view.
Oh, that's right.
So Erasure. Yeah, so that's going to be really big in a couple months. Percival Everett, he's a really great author. He's got a lot of great books, and we got a bunch of them in, too.
We are out of time, but my thanks. It's a great list, and you can see the full list on our website at wamc.org/roundtable. For more information on the Golden Notebook and the great work they do, go to their website, goldennotebook.com, or go visit them in Woodstock, New York, goldennotebook.com. I want to thank both James Conrad and Jackie Callahan for being with us. Thank you both.
Thanks, Joe. It just started
snowing,
so be careful out there.
All right. Be well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.